Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
While Chicago adjusts to working at home, the Score is there for you.
We're just all hanging out here, just wanting our sports, and you guys are still feeding it to us, so that's something I really appreciate.
You're one of the few socializing experiences I have in my life right now, so it's just good to hear your voice.
Thank you, guys. Bottom of my heart, all the Score hosts, for all you're doing. Really grateful to you.
We are Chicago's number one sports station, 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. We have been talking football throughout this show so far because there's been football news. There have been opportunities for league executives to speak because they have their plans. And they say, Jeff Pasch says, our expectation is full season in front of fans, full playoffs. Well, as we bring in Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, who you can find on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of NBC Sports as well. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Mike, why do you think the NFL has taken this defiant approach to saying everything is going to be normal and fine?
I wouldn't use the word defiant. To me, I was on the conference call yesterday with General Counsel Jeff Pasch. It was chillingly nonchalant, where it was to the point where I wondered, are they paying attention to what's going on in the world? Like, I think the better comment, instead of saying we plan to have a full season with full stadiums beginning on time, would be we're planning for everything. I think that's what I want to hear as a football fan, as somebody who covers the game. I want to hear that they're planning for everything because they need to be planning for everything. You can't just keep your head down and wait for something definitive in June or July. And I'm told that the league's focus for now is getting the draft accomplished. They'll worry about everything else after the draft. That's not a responsible way to deal with this either. So I was really taken aback by the way that Jeff Pasch communicated the message on behalf of the league. And I hope that they've just made this conscious decision. They're going to try to create this notion of confidence and defiance of the coronavirus pandemic, but that they do have behind the curtain plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, all the way down to Z. I just haven't heard anything from behind the scenes to suggest to me that they really are planning behind the curtain for the possibilities of a shortened season, season with empty stadiums, season with some stadiums empty, some stadiums full, season where you can't play football at all unless you relocate the entire league to Area 51, whatever the case may be. I don't know what they're planning, other than to say we plan to go forward with a full season.
How much of a factor do you think getting people to watch a draft that won't have the people and pageantry involved is in Pasch's statements about having a full league, a full season, and damn the torpedoes.
Well, I think that's a great point. If they say now, well, who knows whether we're going to have a season, then people are going to say, well, why do we care about the draft then if there isn't going to be a season? So I think you do want to create the impression that it's business as usual, even though 22 days from now it's going to be extremely unusual when you see a bunch of people talking about the draft from FaceTime and Zoom connections with AirPods in their ears and crappy backgrounds behind them like you see on every cable news channel now. It's going to be a weird thing, but it's also going to be the highest rated draft of all time. And one way to goose those ratings is to not do or say anything that would suggest they're doing anything other than preparing for a full football season. It just struck me as so out of touch with what's going on. I mean, this is the same day we got the most dire warnings yet regarding the best case scenario nationwide deaths from this thing. I just feel like that's the last day that you want to be acting like, oh, yeah, everything's going to be fine in a few months. There's no reason to think that. There is reason to think it won't be. There's no reason to be completely and totally pessimistic because there could be some positivity between now and then. But the idea that everything's going to be fine, I mean, September's going to be here before you know it. I just think it's naive to think it's going to be fine. But I like the idea that you don't maximize the interest in the draft if you start waving the white flag, or at least the possibility of a white flag, prematurely.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I think the issue that keeps on popping up in my head is, you remember last year about this time, Mike, we were talking about defensive pass interference and its ability to be reviewed, and the obvious fact that the NFL didn't realize the genie they'd let out of the bottle here. So now we get to this conversation about we're going to have a full season. We've got the new playoffs, and we're going to do it this way. When they have to adapt, and they will, all they've done is open themselves up to questions about whether or not they spent enough time planning for B, C, D, E, F, G, all this kind of stuff. And they're going to have to retroactively tell us that no, we had this the whole time. No one's going to believe them, and they'll foul it up one way or the other. They don't seem prepared for that run of events.
And there is a parallel, given the way the NFL is handling this, to the way the government handled the entire crisis, where you can look back a month ago and read some of the statements made by our leaders and say, what the hell were people thinking a month ago? And I think that there's a chance that we get into June and July, and we're going to look back on things that Jeff Pasch said yesterday, and we're going to say, what in the hell were they thinking? And I mean, we're already saying, what in the hell were they thinking? It's only going to get potentially worse. Unless they know something we don't. That's the silver lining in this. Are they privy to some sort of information we're not? He said that their confidence is based on the modeling that was made available to the owners yesterday on their conference call. Whatever they have that is causing them to be so optimistic, I wish they'd share it with the rest of us. We could all use a little optimism about the clouds parting on this pandemic sooner rather than later. So I don't know. All I know is it knocked me wobbly, and it felt like a Twilight Zone moment, the latest Twilight Zone moment of the many Twilight Zone moments we've had over the past month. But it's like something ain't right here, and it may just be good old-fashioned, damn the torpedoes, get ready for the draft, and please tune in to ESPN, NFL Network, or ABC to maximize our numbers.
You use the word naivete, and that's where I don't give them any benefit of the doubt in that regard. I think it's crass and cynical. I think these are these same owners that have shipped their families off to their third and fourth homes wherever they can find some isolated area, sending their private planes to go pick people up and find their friends and take care of people. Who knows what resources are being hoarded here? There is no damn way that this is naivete. This is sales. This is cynicism. This is a large-scale marketing plan, because when they have to come off of all this stuff, they'll just say that they knew about it in the first place. They'll run the same playbook as everybody else who's revising history as they go.
Yeah, and what have we learned over the course of the past 6 weeks? You can just forget about everything you said. Like, what is anybody going to do? They're not going to rub your face in it. They'll bring it up, and all you say is, all right, who cares? We have bigger fish to fry now, and I think the NFL can get away with it. And that may be one of the reasons why it was Jeff Pasch and not Roger Goodell who wrote that check yesterday. Huh. So Goodell's not the one that has to eat his words later. And I think you're onto something. And look, one of the things the NFL has going for it here, it can justify any maneuver made in the interests of further padding its nest of money by saying this is all for the good of the country, that the nation needs this right now, the people need this right now, they need the distraction, they need the diversion, they need something to look forward to, they need 3 days of an escape from numbers that may be through the roof by the time we get to the first day of the draft on April 23rd. And it's very easy under that guise of altruism to do all sorts of self-motivated, purely capitalistic, maximize the money things. Not that I have a problem with capitalism, but it's kind of a sweet spot they've found where they can say, we're just trying to help the people. Coincidentally, they're helping themselves.
Yeah, they could be right, too. Two things could be true. We may need 3 days of the NFL draft. One way or another, we've got 14 teams in the playoffs starting in 2020, Mike. Talking with Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Dan and I were discussing earlier in the show, Mike, the idea that, you know, the NFL has been quick recently to let go of coaches, to let go of GMs, and just jettison an approach, you know, that maybe needed a year or two left, kind of generally across the league. Do you think an extra playoff team and the ability for teams to say, well, we were so close to that last seed, do you think that means teams will hang on to those front office members they would have jettisoned early, to those coaches? Or do you think that makes them more likely to turn things over even faster because of that extra playoff
spot? No, I mean, it's the litmus test that we hear all the time, right? As these teams try to get better, hey, you better make it to the playoffs or you're going to be out of a job. That's the standard. So now there's two more seats at the playoff table. When we were at the scouting combine back 4.5 weeks ago, before the world was turned upside down, 4 or 5 weeks ago, whatever it was, we asked during the interviews of the various coaches and GMs what they thought about expanded playoffs. There wasn't a single one that complained about it. I mean, the only team that gets screwed by it is the two seed. The two seed's got to play an extra game, and the two seed is going to potentially be banged up or have a key player injured or just be tired and fatigued and could lose that wild card game. Every time you play another game, it's another opportunity to lose. But for most coaches who are thinking about their long-term security and short-term security, I'll take the extra seat at the table because that's how I save my job. And, you know, for the teams, one of the great shell games that I think every team plays on its fan base is creating this impression that the objective every year is to win the Super Bowl. Baloney. The objective is to act like your goal is to win the Super Bowl while you sit back and count as much money as you possibly can, and you can't count as much money as you can unless you're acting like you're trying to win the Super Bowl. I mean, if your standard for success is winning the Super Bowl, 31 teams are going to be pissed off every year, and you know, or even the Patriots of the last 20 years failed more than they succeeded. So if you can avoid the buyouts, avoid the turnover, it actually may help some teams. It may protect them from themselves because they don't feel like they have to, you know, throw the head of the coach to the crowd because they failed to make the playoffs. Or, you know, they can say, hey, we're going to give the coach another chance. We almost made it to the playoffs. So I think it helps everybody. It helps the coaches, it helps the GMs, and it helps the teams avoid more turnover. And we may see a lower percentage of that churn every year, 25% or more. Maybe it's going to be more like 15% if we have these two extra playoff teams and if getting close is good enough.
Talking with Mike Florio on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, as we do every Wednesday starting at 10 o'clock on Sports Radio 670. The Score, a little breaking news here. Wimbledon has announced a cancellation for the first time since World War II. The wow. Wimbledon tennis tournament that was supposed to start on June 28th. Has been canceled. So that's another little pin we can put in the timeline here to look at the realism of what the NFL is doing. But, you know, real talk here for a second, Mike. This is what we were discussing to start the show, and that is the cognitive dissonance that we all have right now in trying to objectively criticize leagues like the NFL and analyze leagues like the NFL while also remaining not just big-time football fans, but having livelihoods that in large part are determined by the interest in sports news. So it might be completely irresponsible for the NFL to have the tone that it has and to be forging ahead with this draft, but you're right. This draft, if they do this, all eyes are, this is an oasis in the sports desert of actual sports content. We are going to be all over this thing for a lot of reasons, and I kind of feel like, I don't know, how how bad should I feel about kind of doing their business for them in that way?
Well, here's where I am. I'm numb to it. I went through the five stages back when free agency was set to begin, and I was banging the drum as loudly as I could that the NFL was making a huge mistake by throwing around hundreds of millions of dollars at a time when people were on the front end of an economic crisis, possibly the worst since the Great Depression, with this public health crisis on top of it. It's a bad look. It's bad optics. And I was convinced that Monday, when the market unofficially opened, that by Wednesday there was a chance there was going to be a national quarantine and that everything was going to be haywire. And how do you get these deals resolved? They're still dealing with that issue. They can't get physicals for these guys. They just announced the Nick Foles trade yesterday, for crying out loud. So I was beaten down by that experience. I was shouted down by all the fans that wanted something that would distract them, by the league's insistence. And once I saw the memo last week from Roger Goodell making it clear that the league is proceeding with the draft and we're going to fine anybody in the league who dares to suggest otherwise, it's like, you know what? You just have to know when you're beaten and you just have to go along. And the draft is happening. And I could waste my time complaining about it, or I could waste my time and spend my time getting ready for it. And I just think that it's a very pragmatic, numb kind of, yeah, you know what, this may not be a great idea, but they're doing it and there ain't a damn thing I can do about it.
Is there any benefit to seeing them just plow forward knowing that someone's going to change their plans for them? The someone there is likely local governments or maybe in a federal government. But I wonder from your perspective, Mike, if that's any kind of solace, knowing that they won't be able to dictate their terms. Not really.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. At some point, what the NFL wants to do is going to come up against what it can do. And one of the reasons why the commissioner sent out a memo last Monday shutting all the facilities is because some of the general managers are saying, look, you're going forward with the draft. Some of the teams are stuck at home because they're in states with stay-at-home orders and they can't go to their facility. Other teams, they can go to the facility. There is a competitive disadvantage as we work to get ready for the draft. So the commissioner's like, fine, everybody stays home. Well, okay, the offseason program isn't going to happen because all it takes is one state where the NFL does business to continue to have a stay-at-home order, and they can't have their offseason program. Well, nobody can have it. And where does that end? You know, we've had seasons where the Saints had to go on the road for the entire year. Remember the first Katrina game? It was a Monday night game. Instead of the Giants at the Saints, it was the Saints at the Giants. Well, how fair is that? That's an extra home game for the Giants and an extra road game for the Saints. And then they were on the road the whole year. The Vikings had their roof collapse in 2010. They played a home game against the Giants in Detroit, of all places. So, you know, these are all issues. Are we going to have some games with no fans, some games with fans, some teams that are on the road the entire year because they can't even practice at home? They got to practice somewhere else because they can't congregate at home. I mean, these are all very, very real issues. To think that this virus is going to uniformly work its way through our society and be at the point in 4 or 5 months where everyone's gone through that initial peak, wherever the peak is, whatever the valley is, whatever the curve is, and is back flat and is going to stay that way for 4 months, that really is naivete. It's almost offensive to the reasonable intelligence of anyone who's been following this to suggest that this is going to work.
Mike, strong stuff. Continued good health to you. We look forward to talking next week.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. We have a lot to do in our next segment. Obviously, the midday midway is coming your way at 10:40. But before then, we got to hear some absolute radio gold from the sports pope, Mike Francesa. I have a tip for you, a social distancing activity that we tried out yesterday that I think we're going to do again, that I would definitely suggest doing with your kids or maybe on your own if you want, because it's something that worked out really well. You might enjoy it. And we have yet another MLB.com list. This list was every franchise's best ever first baseman. And I will tell you now, outside of the one White Sox representative and one Cubs representative, there is another team's best ever first baseman that is a former Cub, And there is another team's best ever first baseman that is a former member of the White Sox. So get those in mind, and we're going to do all of that next. So don't go anywhere. You've got Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Wait a second. I'm going to read the headline. Mike Francesa appears to rip, fought while ripping Adam Gase.
That's a hell of a headline, but there's more that I want you to hear from Mike Francesa, as he's been finding these reserves of righteous anger that I never really knew the guy had. We make fun of him when he's distracted or confused or falls asleep.
Counting. Or when he's counting.
Or he hasn't heard of a player. But I'm going to present this without comment because it was just some real and raw stuff from the Sports Pope.
He basically yesterday accused the hospital of padding the numbers they need because they were trying to sell or sending out the back door the masks. How do you go from using 20,000 masks to 300,000 masks? Can't be done. Go investigate that. You go investigate that. You have your military or FEMA investigate that. That's your job. You're in charge of this. If this is a war, they're stealing your supplies, what do? You tell the media to go investigate it? What, and get back to you in 6 weeks or 2 months as more people die on a daily basis? That's what's wrong here. There's a disconnect. We're watching one thing happen in our city on the 11 o'clock news every night. We're watching people die, and now we know people who died. And we're not seeing one or two people die now in our neighborhood. We're seeing them die by the tens and twenties by the day. They're bringing people out of the hospital in Queens in body bags, 5 minutes from where he grew up. We here know this isn't right. You get the guys in the metropolitan area and ask the cops in New York if it's right now. Ask the firemen in New York who are answering those police calls right, answering those ambulance calls if it's right now. Ask the nurses and the doctors in that hospital if it's right now. They know it's not. They don't have the supplies they need. So don't give me the MyPillow guy doing a song and dance up here on a Monday afternoon when people are dying in Queens. Get the stuff made, get the stuff where it needs to go, and get the boots on the ground. Treat this like the crisis it is. And how can you have a scoreboard that says 2,000 people have died and tell us it's okay if another 198,000 die? That's a good job. How is that a good job in our country? It's a good job if nobody else dies. Not if another 198,000 people die. So now 200,000 people are disposable?
Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Francesa of WFAN.
Wow.
That's you talk about a guy who has, it's one thing if he's talking about the Mets or the Giants, but when you know that things are real, when you can hear the conscience of a besieged city,
yeah,
and what's been going on there, and you know, I think I can share this now that everything is okay. My sister contracted coronavirus relatively early and is now fully recovered and out of quarantine and is feeling fine. But the reports that we get out of New York, she lives in Brooklyn with her family. It is as bad as he's saying there. When he said everybody knows somebody who is sick, was sick, has died, or will soon die. And we hope that that Chicago doesn't get that bad that fast. Chances are it'll come close to that based on all the projections. But when you hear that from him, that's some intense stuff from a guy who has been kind of, you know, just sort of a blasé sports talker for a little while now. That's real.
Well, I'm glad we played it. He's the Pope, you know? I mean, and I guess what it serves to remind is that nobody does just sports anymore. Nobody does just music anymore. Nobody does just lifestyle anymore. Nobody does just entertainment anymore. Every waking moment of life has been touched by this pandemic. You know, I mean, there's no way to get around what this is doing to your everyday. First and foremost, too, I'm glad your sister's recovered, Dan. I'm glad to hear it. I know, you know, we were working when you got that email, and we were, you know, together when that stuff started getting fairly scary. I'm really glad to hear that everything's moving in the right direction. But for so many people, especially in that city, it's not the same kind of story, and you can hear that when you hear Mike Francesa talk about what's affecting his town.
Yeah, that is a guy who knows that he can be the conscience of a city and knows for whom he speaks when he says something like that. It's good to hear people not running from some of these broadcast responsibilities, and good for him. You know, hat tip to the sports Pope right there for being a whole lot more than that. And while we're talking about how we're all dealing with this, let me give you something that we decided to do yesterday. We've been trying to take walks around here and going. There's a park just north of where we live, a small park with, you know, a couple of baseball fields in the corners and a little, like, a walking path that goes around the outside. I mean, it's like a half a mile of a walking path. But we got tired of just walking. You know, being outside and walking and seeing the birds and all that is nice. But my kid's been getting a little antsy, and he obviously is missing his baseball season or any hockey stuff that might be going on, missing out on the golf that we'd be playing. So I realized he has actual disc golf discs, because at overnight camp they play disc golf. And I thought, you know what? Grab your bag. Let's go and just sort of pull it out of our ass here. Let's create a disc golf course on the fly. And even if you don't have the actual discs, even if you just have a frisbee or two, and if your kids can, you know, understand what you're doing, I really advise this. You don't have to go near anyone else. And we walked out to the park, and I said, okay, you see that garbage can all the way over there, the big blue recycling one? I said, par four, go. And we took a good 45 minutes and played nine holes using a tree, a bench, a garbage can, and it was phenomenal. And it actually felt like a sports activity outside, and anybody can do it. All you need is a frisbee or two and some kids wanting to go do it.
That's awesome. Is that your first frolfing experience? Had you frolfed before? Had Jason frolfed?
Yeah, we had done it actually for real on a on an actual disc golf course, one of the public courses here that had disc golf as a component of the regular golf. But you know, this was just kind of doing it on the fly, where I was the caddy and the arbiter of what the hole was, and he would negotiate. I said, "This is par four." He goes, "That's not a par four. That's a par five." I said, "No, it's a long par four. Make the par. This is the hardest hole." So it was a great way to kill a little bit of time. It was the first time we had, you know, a good 45 minutes that didn't feel heavy. And as the weather is starting to warm up, maybe you have the opportunity to do that. But of course, practice the distancing, make sure that other people aren't touching anything, continue to keep washing your hands or bring some wipes if you have them along the way. But it was a really good time.
You know, that sport got really popular late in high school for me, like in Appleton for whatever reason, and even into college. And I will just say that now that more recreational activities are widely accepted and in many spots legal, it is the perfect sport for enjoying yourself in any state of mind, Dan, you know, for whatever that's worth. If you're looking to get yourself into a sporting event and also recreate just a little bit.
Yeah, the 815 says we did that in college, and I would declare certain pavement areas as water hazards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. You can make your own course really kind of wherever you feel like. It's a fun sport as long as your shoulder can hold up to it, because there's a lot of, you know, I mean, if you're really playing like competitive frothing, there's all sorts of like overhand tosses and weird forms that you use the driver on and stuff, and even thinking about it just kind of shreds my shoulder apart.
Yeah, he was working on backhand versus forehand, and then there's, what do they call it, hyzer and anhyzer is the term that they use based on the angle at which the certain shots are supposed to bring it back.
Anheuser-Busch?
Yeah, I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, you can put hyzer on it, or you can put anhyzer on it, and putting hyzer on it means it goes in this direction. I didn't know any of the terms, but he was trying to explain how shaping certain shots and all that. I'm like, all right, go ahead, you know, make it feel like sports. So I mentioned there was a question here regarding the MLB.com has been helping us out here with all kinds of content, and they used their MLB.com writers together their interpretation, I guess, of the best first baseman in every franchise's history. Now, I will tell you that I believe that our friend Jordan Bastian made the wrong call with his Chicago Cubs best ever first baseman.
Really?
Yes.
Who did he go with?
He went with Anthony Rizzo as the best first baseman in Cubs franchise history.
Make the argument, my friend. Why is it not Anthony Rizzo?
Because Mark Grace was way more valuable. Anthony Rizzo's Cubs wins above is 29.8. Mark Grace is 42.2. Like, it is not even close. But he says the fact that Rizzo was this significant of a player on a World Series champion makes the difference. I'm sorry. Mark Grace, over a longer period of time, just accrued a lot more value.
Yeah, that I understand. Rizzo's got a chance to play a couple more years and get the total a little closer, but for that team, for that franchise, a World Series means a hell of a lot more than 10 wins above replacement.
It's more than 10, and you know, Grace was on a playoff team. I think people forget just how good he was. I'm not saying that I don't expect Rizzo just to accrue enough value for this. Not yet. He hasn't been as good as Mark Grace. Now, for the White Sox, obviously, there's one that would be clear, even if you know how many games he played as a designated hitter.
Yeah, obviously it's Frank Thomas.
However, Paul Konerko, it makes a pretty decent number two, and Jose Abreu is already slotted in as number three in this time. So that brings us to the question. Who are the two others? What other franchise all-time best first baseman? One is a former Cub, one is a former White Sox. Who are they?
So my only concern with guessing Rafael Palmeiro is whether he played enough time with either the Rangers or the Orioles, because it's, you know, three. He went Rangers, Orioles, right? Is it Rafael Palmeiro?
It's not, because for the Orioles, it is clearly Eddie Murray. And
yeah,
it's going to be impossible to unseat him there. And for the Rangers, it's Will Clark.
Oh, yeah. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
And
I
what they say is
forget about Will Clark.
Yeah, the debate for the spot between Clark and Palmeiro goes back 28 years, and they're both free agents and both pursued by the Rangers. They say Clark's status as the first baseman on Texas's first ever division champion tips the scales in his favor. So it is not Rafael Palmeiro, but I will award you with a good guess for that one.
Jay and I both think it is Derek Lee.
You and Jay are both wrong.
Bill Buckner didn't have enough years with the Red Sox, nor enough years with the Dodgers. Remember how we were talking about how Dodgers players, like position players, weren't all... It's not... Eric Karros isn't the greatest Dodger first baseman of all time, is he?
Eric Karros? No.
He's not, right?
No, the greatest Dodgers first baseman of all time is somebody named Gil Hodges.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Was he good? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 43.3 BWAR. And by the way, if you're asking now, if Derek Lee is not the best in Marlins history, who is? It's Jeff Conine. He was there from 93 to 97 and from 03 to 05, two-time All-Star, a member of both of their World Series title teams, known as Mr. Marlin. He is the guy who takes that award for them.
Gross.
Ew, yeah.
Sorry.
Definitely not a better player, just played for them longer.
Oh, man, this is tougher than I thought it would be.
Yeah, texters, there were enough texters that got it. The Cub is really difficult to get. The White Sox, you probably should get. His name has come up a couple of times.
A couple times recently?
Yeah.
Oh,
relatively in some of these other discussions.
Is it Slugger Tomei? Jim?
Yes, it's Jim Tomei.
Okay.
Jim Tomei with the Cleveland Indians. Jim Tomei ranked as their best ever first baseman. The brawny yet gentle Tomei. It actually says here, it says the brawny yet gentile. So
probably accurate.
Both are true, but that is a great, great typo. I'll tell you, the former Cub is listed as the best first baseman in the history of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, it's the crime. It's Fred McGriff.
It is not Fred McGriff.
What?
Yes, does your Carlos Pena, as Terry used to say.
He was
His 46 home runs in 2007 stand as a club record. Carlos Pena.
Really? God, really? That whole Rays experience, just, yeah. I don't know. That's what a ridiculous franchise. Did you see, I think it was yesterday, was the anniversary of the first pitches for both the Diamondbacks franchise and the Rays franchise. I guess was the first game in their individual franchise's history. And just, I don't know, it's like Chad Bennis on the mound. And I, yeah, I mean, it's just really sad, sad stuff. Because you're watching and the ballparks are packed. It's just this whole atmosphere and flashbulbs going off and everything. But you're watching knowing that like nine people showed up to the game the next day. And just the sad, sad next handful of years for all of that. It was just rough.
I just had an email come in from Glenn who says, "You're all wrong. The best first baseman all time for the Cubs is Frank Chance. A lifetime WAR of 45.8. It was on two winning World Series teams."
Ah. What about...
cool.
How many games did Ernie Banks play at first base? I mean, it's a lot, right?
Not enough. Yeah,
not
enough. No,
but a lot.
A lot, but not enough. We have the Midday Midway coming your way next. I have an interesting employee that's working for a Maryland winery. And I also want you to think about sports broadcasters doing play-by-play for your sex tape.
I'd rather not.
But you're going to.
God. You want to think of Vin that way?
You can.
I don't want Vin around in that area of my life, though he has been. I mean, let's be honest. Everybody's had a Dodger game on while things have been going on. The Midday Midway is on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
It's time for the Midday Midway. We always get you caught up with what we've been talking about. We started with the NFL and the fact that they are just soldiering ahead, saying, screw it, we're going to have a full season. We are going to have the games in our stadiums, full season, full playoffs, expanded playoffs. We're doing the draft. I don't think it's really going to happen, but this stance that they're taking is almost a remarkable one. We heard from Brock Olivo, his appearance earlier this morning on the Mully and Haw Show, talking about his experience, the former Bears assistant coach, coaching football in Rome and quarantined there, giving us some perspective. Mike Florio joined us. We heard that inspired rant from Mike Francesa talking about what's happening in his city. Gave a little coronavirus activity tip, and as we did our little MLB trivia that we've been doing, we need to issue a correction because I learned something about baseball I did not know.
What's that?
And that is Jimmy Fox, who on this list was listed as not only the best first baseman in Red Sox history, but also the best first baseman in Athletics history. Jimmy Fox had an 85-game stint with the Chicago Cubs.
Double X. So that's another one.
I did not know that. I did not know that Jimmy Fox at one point, 42 through 44, 85 games total. I think he was pretty well pickled at that point, but that was, there. He was indeed a Cub. Let the record note that. My bad.
You blew it! Yeah, here's the thing. I saw a lot of the texters point that out just now, and let me just say, we're doing the best we can with a whole bunch of old-timey baseball trivia. And there's a nice way to say that, Karen. There's a nice way to text in and let everybody know that we missed Jimmy Fox and that we got to look at Jimmy Fox. This just, you don't have to be a jerk about it. That's all I'm saying. All right, you know that during this time of self-quarantine, of social distancing, and of virus pandemic that I've been trying to find silver linings for everybody as best I can in this segment. Dan, I may have this most silvery of linings for you today. I know for you and for Shane Reardon, both of you, cooks in your own right. Did you chime in, by the way? Did you watch any of Shane's Meats live Instagram last night?
I did not. I heard the promos for it. He was very enthusiastic about it.
Nah, the kid was cooking up a storm. It was live on Instagram, and I got to tell you, I tuned in for about 5 minutes or so. It looked great. I mean, the kid, he did a great, great job. The presentation was really fun. But I know both of you like cooking with this particular ingredient, and there's news around it. As restaurants around the U.S. close, follows this report, prices for the cut of pork used to make bacon have plunged to lows not seen since Bill Clinton was president. Pork bellies have tumbled to around 41 cents per pound, the lowest since 1999, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, compared with 93 cents 2 weeks ago. Long and short of it is, for whatever reason, people are buying up eggs and beef to stockpile during our social distancing. But bacon prices have dropped. They've almost bottomed. So that means that not only is there an opportunity for those of us who enjoy bacon, and let's be honest, who doesn't, but for those of us who want to try and cook with pork bellies who are out there, but there's a surplus on the shelves at most supermarkets, which means that it is our duty as the Bernstein and McKnight show, as the Bernstein and McKnight listener, as the Score listener, it is our duty to go buy surplus bacon and take it off the shelves of beleaguered grocery stores everywhere and help them out by eating as much cured meat as possible.
I think it moved.
That is our civic responsibility in these troubled times. Go buy yourself 6 or 7 pounds of bacon and eat the whole damn thing.
I will follow that up with something that may relate. I may have a pairing for you because a Maryland winery is observing social distancing protocol in its curbside deliveries with an unusual employee, a delivery dog. Stonehouse Urban Winery in Hagerstown has been offering curbside pickup to abide by the government's orders and to make sure that employees and customers keep a safe distance. The deliveries are being made by a 75-pound brindle boxer named Soda Pup. Now, if it's a boxer, I can tell you, you're just going to be damn lucky if the thing doesn't fart on you, because I've never been around dogs who have had more of a knack for putting on that kind of exhibition. Also, not only if you have people over, but depending on the social status of them, like if the Queen of England comes over, it's going to be an absolute fireworks show from that dog. People call to have Soda Pup bring wine out to them. She said, even people who've never been here before, says Lori Yatta, Soda Pup's owner and the co-owner of the winery. The 11-year-old canine carries 2 bottles of wine at a time and gets plenty of breaks to keep from getting exhausted. And she says that they're making tons of wine. They're hoping to get into a fall festival, so they have to make more wine. And they normally can't keep up with some of this stuff, so they happen to be making a ton of wine. So go ahead and get some wine and have it with your bacon.
It's a pretty good pairing. In college, it was bacon night at a particular bar in Madison. That was $1 PBR, $1 hams, and all the bacon you could eat. Wine and bacon seems like the play in these elevated times. And, you know, here's the thing. A couple of people have texted in that bacon doesn't freeze well. That's true. It doesn't freeze well, but it does freeze. So you might as well just go buy it and eat the bacon anyway.
But you'd have to freeze when you get 6 to 7 pounds of bacon?
Although, you know, like a standard... Dan, you know this, and Rick, I'm sure you do too, but like... The standard, like, cookie sheet that you cook bacon on, or at least I do like a grate on top of the cookie sheet, lets the hot air get underneath the bacon and crisps it up the way I like to do it. It fits almost every bacon strip properly. There's like 1 or 2 strips that don't fit, and then you've got to make the second batch or something like that. You just got to find a larger cookie sheet or something. I don't know. Any tips on how to fit the entire bacon rasher in the oven or something? The phrase, press spacebar to continue, may not mean anything to an older generation, but to my generation, it means everything. Dan, have you ever played the old-time computer game Oregon Trail?
No, I know of it. That's the one where you die of dysentery.
You die of everything, and if you make it, okay, it's a damn miracle. But yeah, dysentery's tough. You gotta watch out for the rickets, not the family, the actual disease. That's a thing that gets there. Cholera, that's a problem too. You ford the river, knock the wheels off, all that kind of stuff. I have found a website. It's called the Internet Archive. It has a whole bunch of old-timey computer games, you know, the real good old-school ones. I will tweet the link if you are interested, but as you've knocked off, like I mentioned, every game in the house and downloaded everything on the phone and you've run through all of the games, the old school Oregon Trail is there for you. You can just head over to the website, hit the link, click the thing, and start playing the Oregon Trail. You will die. Many of you will die on the Oregon Trail. But it's worth the run because in these times, we're looking for any game we possibly can. I'll tweet the link a little after the Midday Midway.
So you know that Joe Buck has been doing this experiment where he's doing play-by-play for videos that social media followers are sending him, really mundane videos, and he's happy to do play-by-play, and it's given him something to do. He's been enjoying it. Golf trick shots, marble racing, and it's been fun. So, Buck, in an interview with KMOX, this per the Sporting News, he has a request. Stop sending him sex tapes.
Oh, no!
No.
He told KMOX that he's received several videos, which are on the more amorous side. He will not be posting or calling play-by-play of those. He says, yeah, I've received quite a few. You got to be careful. You got to go through these like the Zapruder film because you're worried there's going to be something in the background, something hidden like a highlights magazine that we shouldn't focus on. Said, I've had a couple submissions from a man and a woman that didn't seem appropriate, maybe later in life, but not now. So that got me to thinking, if you had to put your wish list out there, would it be Vin Scully, as was earlier mentioned? 3 and 2. Let's see if this can be placed in the proper place. It's got to be Pat Hughes, right?
Describing everything.
it's good. That's a lovely name, right? It's got to be. There's so many.
That's a full-length tube sock with stripes on both sides of the sock.
Right. Or a really pedantic Doc Emrick intro when he does like the non sequitur intro, right? You are looking at downtown Nashville. This is the home of country music in America. That leads us to the song that is playing in the bedroom that is by Taylor Swift. You know, it would just be phenomenal.
Or you could go
hand on the back of the brassiere. It has three flaps. It is pink with some lace around the middle where your eyes tend to go.
You could go the other direction. You could have Jim Ross as your announcer during it. You know, it's a, oh my God, off the turnstile. You know, it's just like a really crazy WWE style. I mean, if you're into the more adventurous.
The Undertaker shows up.
Yeah.
It's a different tab.
So have fun with that one. That is the Midday Midway. We do it most days right around this time. But now we're going to get serious because we have work to do as a show. Because we have decided we are going to be the show that gets to the bottom of the endless, wonderful story that is the 1986 Chicago White Sox. This is because of an accident. This is because of a spoof book that Jeff Perlman said he was unveiling that he's not, that he didn't write, about the story of the 86 White Sox. I fell for it, and he's DM'd me and he goes, yeah, it's a bit, dude. And I'm like, damn it, because this would have been awesome. There's so much going on with this team. We're going to talk to a member of the 1986 White Sox as we are going to continue to solicit some of these appearances to find out just what happened and how that affected White Sox history. Because
Dan,
it did.
Hold on 1 second. We missed an announcer. This has to be said before we get to Kittle. Kevin Harlan, the pants come off, and it's COD!
Up high, down hard!
COD!
It is COD! Ugh, I don't even want to picture what it would be if in fact it is COD. But
it's
Ron
COD.
Kittle is going to be with us next on Bernstein and McKnight. Keep it here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.